And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, we have Betty Long, RN, MHA, President, CEO, and founder of Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates, and Dr. Lisa Gill, CRNP, Geriatric Nurse Practitioner and Chief Clinical Officer at Primary Home Care. And ladies, thank you for being on today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning.
Let's get started with, I just gave your titles, but would you like to do the elevator speech and just let us know a little bit more about you? Betty, you want to start?
Sure. So I've been a nurse for 36 years, and about 20 years ago, I started a company called Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates because several family members and my position in the hospital was telling me that really patients needed a little bit more help getting through the healthcare system. So in 2003, I started Guardian Nurses, and it's been a joyful ride these last 19 years.
And Lisa?
Sure. Hi, I'm a nurse practitioner, a healthcare leader, and I specialize in geriatrics, dementia, and chronic disease management in the home and post-acute setting. I have worked with alternative payment models in healthcare. I really love to grow and develop nurse practitioner teams. Right now, I am the chief clinical officer for Primary Home Care, which is a health calls company that serves over 1,000 homebound patients in the Philadelphia and surrounding county.
Well, today's show is obviously going to be about nursing. When I was young, of course, a nurse traditional role, it was a hospital position or possibly in a physician's office. But today, the role has grown where you're more integrated in the total healthcare system now. Do you want to talk a little bit about what are some of the roles for a nurse today? And by nurse, I'm talking about somebody who has graduated with a four-year college degree. Is that the best way to start?
Yeah, Lisa, you have a lot of experience with the different roles.
Yeah, so I think that today, traditionally, it is the four-year degree, although there are still other ways to obtain your RN. I think through the years, the role of the nurse has always evolved and changed to really answer the needs and meet the needs of the healthcare community and population health at large. And so we have seen the evolution of these different nursing roles from your traditional bedside clinical nurse to clinical nurse specialist who specialize in certain areas such as labor and delivery. Then you have nurse practitioners such as myself, where we have the ability to diagnose and prescribe. And then within the field of nursing, there's just so many different ways that we support the community's needs. And as you mentioned, Laura, certainly in the hospital, and there's also in the home, in skilled nursing facilities. And I think that I think Betty really has just done a great job of recognizing a critical need in really healthcare advocacy and managing transitions of care. So Betty, I'd like to toss it to you.
Lisa, I mean, clinically, you have the kind of a finger on the pulse, but I think in an outpatient setting, I mean, Laura, all of my nurses, the 52 nurses on my team, all have at least 10 years of nursing experience, acute care nursing experience. And so they bring to their roles a lot of experience working in an acute care setting. Some of them have upwards of 30 to 40, right? So these are not rookies that are working to, as Lisa said, transition folks from hospital to home or from an outpatient setting to hospital. So we are navigating the patient's way through a very complex healthcare system. If anybody's been even near a hospital or a healthcare system in the last 3 years, they know that it's very complex.
How has it changed since you got started? Would you go and would you join the ranks today?
Join the ranks inside the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a young person's role. In fact, my nephew was hospitalized last week, and I noticed all of the nurses caring for him in both the ICU and the step down were under 30 years old. And I thought, yep, that's the senior nurses like Lisa and I are in management roles or administrative roles or outside of the hospital.
I should have waited until the end of our conversation today to ask you that question, because that was kind of loaded. But because really, we were going to talk about something that you both alluded to, Betty, when you mentioned why you started your company because of the management angle. And Lisa, you alluded to that as well. Do we get enough out of our healthcare system because we're too dumb, or we're too ill-informed, or we just get too beaten down and we need somebody to manage us?
Well, before Lisa answers, I think the healthcare system is a black hole. It's a nightmare, right? And you're feeling sick. You're not necessarily at your top of your game. So to enter that, to connect with a physician, to get an appointment, then to go to the appointment and hear a lot of stuff coming at you, it can be overwhelming, particularly if you're not feeling well. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic and just the whole mess that the healthcare system has become with short staffing has resulted in patients waiting very long times for appointments, not getting results reported quickly. It's just delayed a lot of care. And patients don't feel like they're empowered to make that phone call and say, hey, I didn't get that MRI result, or they don't even know who to call to get the MRI result, or to get, I called my doctor and I got an appointment for February. They don't think, oh, okay, well, I guess it's February. And you're thinking, no, let's get that moved up. So Lise, how about you? What's your experience been?
It's really very similar, Betty. I think that a couple of experience that I had in the last few years on a personal level, where I thought, wow, this was complicated. And I know the system. I know how things work. And I still had a hard time. And so I think, Betty and I have spoken in the past that we are the nurse in the family. And so we really tend to act as the advocate for other members of our family. And I just have seen it become so much more complex, so many more layers. And you're right, Betty, if you don't stay on top of, did we get those results? Or, it will just kind of, it's so easy to fall through the cracks. And if something falls through the cracks when it's your health or your loved one's health, it can have really bad consequences. So you really do need an advocate.
Even if it's not in the official role of being the advocate, aren't nurses by default healthcare navigators? I mean, they are the ones you actually interact with in the office, in the hospital, definitely, and on the phone. You in many cases, you don't even see an actual doctor.
Yeah, that's true. I think nurses, there's 4 million, I think it's 4 million nurses in the United States. And many, I think they're the backbone of the healthcare system. And, Lisa and I have talked about just how technology has changed healthcare. And yet it's still, at the end of the day, it's the nurse who's going to interact with you, the nurse practitioner. Patients sometimes prefer seeing a nurse practitioner because they spend more time with them. They have a better sense of how to educate them because of their nursing training.
That's a great point, Betty. And because we are nurses, nurses first, nurses always, we tend to be more holistic. So we see the person as a person, not as a disease. And that's really, I think, important for people. And I think in general, Laura, to your point, nurses were so much larger in number. So we are more accessible. We tend to be more approachable. People seem to be more comfortable to ask us questions and to really kind of sit down and have a conversation about their health. So I think those are some of the reasons why nurses fill such an important niche in the healthcare system.
Well, there are 4 million of them, you're saying. Is that enough? Are you able to attract people to the nursing profession today? We've heard about the shortages that many hospitals experienced during COVID, and we've heard so much about burnout and nurses leaving the field. Do we have enough nurses, and is it an attractive enough field to get people interested in it? What kind of calling does it take?
Well, if you liken back to Florence Nightingale in the 1800s, she thought it was a religious calling. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that it's an attractive career. It's a wonderful career. There's a lot of diversity. You can, as Lisa has done, become a nurse practitioner, become an advanced clinical nurse specialist. There's a lot of roles, but if you're asking me if there are enough nurses, no. And the training of a nurse, the 4-year training of a nurse, there aren't enough nurse educators to accommodate the possible demand. If we could recruit more students into nursing, there aren't at this point enough educators to educate them. Lise, would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a challenge, and that certainly is kind of a gating factor. I think also for nurse practitioners, reimbursement is really tough, and also the medical model that we need to fit into is a challenge because, as Betty mentioned, we tend to take more time with people, which patients want. They really need that and they treasure it, but we don't get paid more for that time. We are reimbursed at a lower rate from our physician colleagues. And so it makes the practice of medicine a challenge, I think, for nurse practitioners, especially in my current setting, in the house calls setting. So, just to make the model, if you're being paid fee for service, the model is, it really puts a lot of, I think, pressure to see the number of patients that you can see so that we can keep doing what we're doing. And I think, back in the day, going into medicine was really looked at as a very lucrative, profession. And I think even our, physician colleagues would agree right now, there's so many downward pressure from, medical regulation and, malpractice insurance and things like that, that really make this field, it almost does have to be a calling, like might not be a religious calling, but you have to have this real desire in you to really, help people and make a difference.
Yeah, no one goes into nursing to get rich.
That's true.
You mentioned diversity, but I know that you were talking about diversity as far as the fields and the job opportunities that were out there. Who is becoming a nurse? Is this still a more female job, or are men going into it? And do they get a different experience from becoming a nurse?
Lise, do you want to? I mean, I think there's, I mean, I know Lise and I work with a young man. He was an older man for us, but, in the CCU, who was one of the first male nurses that I had met. But now it's, commonplace. As I said, when I visited my nephew this last week, there were plenty of male nurses. It's not as uncommon an experience. And I think that the more that they pay, the more men will get into it because it's a relatively decent job to have when you come out of college, right? To be making in Philadelphia, $75,000, $80,000, as a first year nurse is a pretty good salary.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question in terms of, the roles and diversity. I agree. We have more men in nursing than ever, and that we need them. That's great. I think it seems, I don't know, Betty, if you would agree that men tend to gravitate more to your more critical care, ortho kind of roles, where is kind of what I'm seeing. But certainly, I think that they bring a needed perspective into healthcare because representation matters, in all of its forms.
But what about the entry-level positions, healthcare entry level, someone who doesn't have a degree? Maybe they have an LPN, maybe they are working for a personal care provider. We're looking at mostly women in those positions.
But that's the thing, and maybe that's another thing that we didn't touch on is that I think it's been a female-dominated profession because we are nurturers at heart. Females are usually more of the nurturer. I know this sounds so gender-specific, but also because it really provides a lot of flexibility that as you are, raising a family, that you can work part-time, you can work shifts, you can work weekends. So it really provides some nice opportunities as well.
And I think it's the other thing is that they're only getting, well, back in, they're only getting $9 an hour, and no man would work for $9 an hour,
Yes. Oh,
right?
you're
And
right,
now they're
Betty.
getting, 15 an hour. It's still a physical job,
Yeah.
right? To deal with somebody, roll them over, give physical care. It's a very intimate, it's, trust, all that. And they're getting $15 an hour, maybe.
Yes.
Let's go back to the home care providers, the LPNs, the associate degrees. They make no money. What are the odds of somebody getting out of that bottom rung and climbing up through degrees or certifications to get a better job?
I don't know the statistics on that, Laura. Mm-hmm. And the point is, we need somebody at all of the levels. We need our home health aides and our caregivers. But there are some, because I have hired them. And like I said, the person I just hired dropped out of high school at 16. And, you know, and here she is, who is level by level a nurse practitioner.
Well, and I'm in my role as president of the Nightingale Awards, we offer scholarships through the year to LPN students, to even nurses aides who want to get into an LPN program, or an RN who wants to get her BSN. So there are still programs out there, to your point, Laura, about an LPN training that, you know, they can get an LPN license and then get an RN. But healthcare up until COVID was kind of phasing out LPNs, right? They wanted a four-year BSN RN on their staff. And now they're rethinking that because of the shortage. So some facilities are bringing back LPNs in acute care. I know that they've been used in home care and in skilled care, in post-acute care. But I think getting into a four-year college program is difficult and it's expensive, mm-hmm. right? A four-year program at say Villanova is, I don't know, $60,000 a year. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. You've said something kind of telling. If the pay was higher, we'd get more men getting into nursing. Can we talk about money?
Yeah, well, when I was in England last month, I was talking with a lot of British nurses. Just as a perspective, there was a 17-year veteran nurse who told me that her salary was £35,000 a year, which is about $40,000. She had 17 years of experience. If she came over to the U.S. as a 17-year veteran, she'd be making over $100,000. And they're rookie nurses, as I call them. They're nurses who are just graduated from nursing are making £23,000 a year, right? So that's, you know, they're having a shortage in the U.K., but in the U.S., nurses are, at least in the Philadelphia region, because we're a major metropolitan market, they're making more than, say, somebody, you know, in the Midwest, say. But it is still a decent job, you know, now, thankfully, than it was 30 years ago.
Is it hard to get somebody to get into the house call part of nursing? Is that a challenge? Do you have trouble recruiting there?
Gosh, wow, you really handed that one to me, Laura.
yeah.
Yes, yes, and yes. It's a very different kind of practice, especially as we've discussed that the typical pathway for a new nurse is, you know, starts in the hospital. And so you kind of really gain your initial experience and your footing, and you learn so much in the hospital, and you learn the acute, and you learn, subacute kind of in the hospital setting. And so shifting to the house calls end of things is really a challenge. It's very different to go into someone's home. It's helpful for us if a nurse has already done home care, because they're at least used to going into someone's home. It is really a wonderful way to practice medicine, to practice nursing. And I think of a nurse practitioner as that blend of nursing and medicine. Going into someone's home can be challenging. It's also such a privilege. And I think there is nothing more impactful to your to the profession and to your own sense of really making a difference as meeting someone where they live and really seeing what are the social factors that are impacting this person's health. When someone walks into a primary care office for a physical or a well check, or because, you know, they're feeling sick, you see the person in this, you know, this setting, this, you know, very clean primary care office. You don't get an idea of the other factors that this person is dealing with in their life, both from a support structure and from, you know, barriers and challenges to their healthcare. When you see someone at home, you are typically, especially because they are also homebound, you are really treating that person within their system, within their support system. You're also really teaching. You're doing a lot of teaching with the family, with caregivers, and seeing what are the social factors that you need to help them really negotiate in order for them to maintain or improve their health. And that can be as simple as sanitation, as electricity. There's someone that we saw who didn't even have enough amperage to support her oxygen canister, her oxygen concentrator. So these are the kinds of things that doing health calls in a big city, really, these are the challenges that it brings. And also, really, I think if you really need to feel good about what you're doing, this is the place to be.
Well, getting into advocacy as well as in-home services, as we're aging and we're getting older and older, and obviously we're talking about the Philadelphia, Camden, Delaware, this area around in here, we are an aging population. We are a poorer population. And at the same time, we're hearing all these words about aging in place, staying at home, the high costs of hospitalization, and the difficulty of getting admitted. So being an advocate for someone who is getting home care and having those warm bodies to go into the homes, is this going to be a real challenge?
Yeah, I mean, to Lisa's point, home care now, we've talked about the shortage of nurses, right? Home care particularly is experiencing staffing shortages. So even when I was talking about my nephew being discharged from the hospital, to have a nurse come out to see him and then a physical therapist is going to be 48 to 72 hours is what we were told. Now, I'm a nurse, his aunt's a nurse. So we have a lot of nurses in the family, but we don't necessarily have the support of the healthcare system for that role. So my role as his advocate is to try to get the ball moving a little bit, try to make sense that he's going to be safe when he gets home, that his discharge from the hospital is going to include all that he needs, his education, his medication, like understanding what his activity level can be, because there's such a throughput in hospitals to discharge someone now. And I think Lisa would agree, is just here's 20 pieces of paper, good luck, and off you go. And, you know, then we're done. And, you know, that nurse has just discharged somebody and somebody's going to take that bed as soon as they can clean it. So I think advocacy and having someone in the home to just put eyes on and work with that patient is incredibly important to prevent a readmission.
Yeah. And I think, Betty, I would also add to that, that we talked about some of the different levels of nursing and, you know, LPNs and RNs. There's also a really critical shortage of caregivers and nursing assistants. And this often is really the gateway for someone, you know, going into nursing. And so it's really challenging. I think the positives of being a caregiver, a home health aide, or a nursing assistant is that it gives you a way to get into the field, to get some real life practical experience. The pay is not great, but it helps you get in the door. And then if you like that, then there are pathways for you maybe to become an LPN and then an RN. And a lot of times if you're working somewhere, then you can get some tuition assistance to help kind of pay for your education going forward. So I've hired a lot of nurse practitioners, recently just hired a nurse practitioner who got her GED, had something happened and did not even graduate from high school. And someone like this is the person who has determination and who really like just took one step at a time over the course of her life and one degree at a time. And I just think that that's amazing.
So we have seen the roles of nursing expand so dramatically over the last 10 years, 20 years, 40 years. I know that the associations have been meeting recently. What's the overall thought behind the national associations? What are you seeing coming forward? What's the future hold here?
The future of nursing? Oh, let me think. Hold on. No, actually, Philadelphia just had the Magnet Conference, and there were 11,300 nurses, which is so cool to think that everybody's there. They're all pumped up. And the national organizations realize that we have to get more people into nursing, right? We have to be represented. We have to be, to Lisa's point, we have to get better reimbursement for nurse practitioners. So I think the national organizations are all very acutely aware of what they need to do to improve the, I don't want to say the stature of nursing, but certainly improve the future of nursing, because they realize we're at a critical point. And most of them will say it wasn't just COVID that did this. It was before COVID. It was well before COVID that, the average age of a nurse is, I think, 48 years old, right? So nurses are aging out, and then COVID hit, and it's like, yeah, I don't want to, I'm not doing this. I'm 53 and I'm done, right? So that's, I think the organizations that lead nursing, the ANA, the nurse practitioner organizations, they realize that this is crisis time.
And I think the one of the other things that I'm seeing is in terms of direction in the future is looking at reimbursements and payments in a different way, and all the alternative payment models that really put the focus on quality over quantity. So not being paid because you did a task, but being paid or reimbursed because you hit quality measures, which really I think is a really important pivot point for both the nursing and the medical profession right now.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, and a much longer one.
Yes.
Well, I'm giving you the 2-minute warning. Do you wish to very quickly explain that or give us our parting words?
You know what? I think really parting words at this point would probably be would probably be the easier way to go here, but yeah.
Coward. Okay. So who really needs to be listening to your words? Is it the insurance companies? Is it the hospitals? Is it the patient? Who should be looking more closely at where we are going to help the profession?
Well, I think if we're all focused on patients, right, which we should be, that is the whole point of the healthcare system, is to help patients. The insurance companies, the physicians, the DME companies, everybody should be focused on the outcomes, to Lisa's point, on quality outcomes. But unfortunately, in this system that we have constructed, it is about payment. It is about insurance companies making money. It's about DME and pharma companies making money. So it's not based on patients. It's focused on profit. And
Yeah.
so that's a whole shift and another conversation. But if we all kind of focused on, when Lisa and I worked at Medical College of Pennsylvania, we had a patient-focused initiative, all hands on deck. And I was like, wait a minute, aren't we? I've been focused on patients for years. What is this new initiative called patient-focused care, right? So it was just a new management initiative. Didn't work.
Well, you just explained it to us, so we got everything in one parting words and an explanation of outcome-based versus service-based reimbursement. Does that phrase it correctly?
I think so. And Laura, I think the other thing that I would say to our nursing colleagues all throughout the region is that burnout is a real thing, and it's very present. We've all felt it at different points in our career, probably at no greater time than during COVID. But I would just, ask my nursing colleagues to kind of hang in there as we have done throughout time, and to really find that recommitment, because that really is the antidote to burnout. It's not pulling away, it's not pulling back, it's kind of refocusing and recommitting to kind of find that, find that
The joy.
the
Find the
joy.
joy.
Find the joy. That's right.
Find the joy that drove you into nursing.
That's right.
And those are great words to end with. And if somebody is listening to this, where would you suggest somebody start or go to start learning more about the profession?
Well, if it was me, I would go to the American Nurses Association website. That would be a good first start.
And also, I mean, most people know a nurse. for someone in the healthcare field. And so if you know a nurse, talk to them and find out, you know, what do you like about it? How did you get into it? And if you can, find a mentor.
My guest today, Dr. Lisa Gill, CRNP, geriatric care nurse practitioner and chief clinical officer at Primary Home Care. Find them at nphousecalls.org. And Betty Long, RN, MHA, president, CEO, and founder of Guardian Nurses Healthcare Advocates. And you find them online at guardiannurses.com. Ladies, thank you very much for being with us today and shedding a little bit of light on the nursing profession.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. It was a pleasure.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.